coming out of a war that we still don't know why we went in.
Don't look, don't tell seems to be the official policy about depleted uranium. We suspect as much as 1,500 tons may have been used.
President Bush appears to have misled the American people, deceived Congress, violated the UN Charter, blown billions of dollars and many lives, both American and Iraqi, on a phony war, and will likely be reelected.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, June 9th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. With U.S. troops deployed in more countries than ever, the Bush administration is pressing the U.N. Security Council to exempt all U.S. troops and officials from the jurisdiction of the new International Criminal Court, or ICC, for a second straight year. According to OneWorld.net, Washington says it needs more time to negotiate bilateral agreements with more countries around the world that would bar them from surrendering U.S. nationals to the court, which has just begun operations in The Hague. The ICC was set up to investigate and prosecute individuals for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Two of the highest-ranking leaders of al-Qaeda in American custody have told the CIA in separate interrogations that the terrorist organization did not work jointly with the Iraqi government of Saddam Hussein, according to several intelligence officials. Abu Zabudaya, a Qaeda planner and recruiter until his capture in March 2002, told his questioners last year that the idea of working with Saddam Hussein's government had been discussed among Qaeda leaders, but that Osama bin Laden had rejected such proposals. That's according to an official who has read the Central Intelligence Agency's classified report on the interrogation. In his debriefing, Zabudaya said bin Laden had vetoed the idea because he did not want to be beholden to Saddam Hussein. Separately, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the al-Qaeda chief of operations until his capture on March 1st in Pakistan, has also told interrogators that the group did not work with Saddam Hussein. The Bush administration has not made these statements public, though it frequently highlighted intelligence reports that supported its assertions of links between Iraq and al-Qaeda as it made its case for war against Iraq. President Bush today insisted that Baghdad had a program to manufacture weapons of mass destruction, seeking to rebut critics who say his administration's credibility is at stake in the search for illicit arms. But the White House said it would be appropriate for Congress to review the intelligence that led up to the war. Weeks of searches in Iraq by military experts have not validated the administration's portrayal of Iraq's cache of weapons. Alleged stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons have not turned up, nor has significant evidence of a nuclear weapons program. Iraq had a weapons program, Bush told reporters during a meeting of his cabinet. Intelligence throughout the decade shows they had a weapons program. I am absolutely convinced that with time we'll find out they did have a weapons program, Bush said. Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, top Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, said he wants a full congressional investigation, saying, quote, I think that the nation's credibility is on the line as well as Bush's, he said. Asked whether American credibility is at stake, Bush pointed to the outcome of the war, not the search for weapons of mass destruction. He said, quote, the credibility of this country is based upon our strong desire to make the world more peaceful, and the world is now more peaceful after our decision, he said. Bush also insisted that al-Qaeda had a presence in Baghdad, but he stopped short of promising that banned weapons or evidence of their manufacture will be found. White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, during his daily briefing today, took questions regarding remarks made by Bush in a radio address where Bush said Iraq had stockpiled biological and chemical weapons, an assertion that was refuted in a Defense Intelligence Agency report on September 2002. The DIA stated that there was, quote, no reliable information on whether Iraq is producing and stockpiling chemical weapons, end quote. Russell Mokyber followed up with questions regarding the recent tax cut and Iraq's alleged WMDs.
The tax bill cut the president's own personal income tax by $26,000. I'm wondering, what does he plan to do with the extra cash?
I haven't asked him.
Second question. You said in April that the war was about weapons of mass destruction. The war resulted in tens of thousands of innocent civilian deaths, according to the Los Angeles Times. Do you personally feel any remorse given the public case that's being made that this war was based on that false pretext?
Number one, you have no basis to say that it's a false pretext. Number two, I think when you take a look at all the mass graves that have been discovered all around Iraq, I think the world breathes a sigh of relief that a brutal dictator like Saddam Hussein, who had no regard for human rights, has been removed from power so that the Iraqi people can, at long last, have a life and build a future that's based on freedom and opportunity, not on tyranny.
You said it was based on weapons of mass destruction.
And that still stands, as you've heard earlier in the conversation.
Corporate crime reporter Russell Mokyber and programmer for Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, D.C. British intelligence officers say they're holding a smoking gun, but it has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein was or was not manufacturing. According to an article in the United Kingdom Independent, senior intelligence officers say they were subjected to a series of demands by Prime Minister Tony Blair's staff to produce dossiers to justify the invasion into Iraq. The officers are furious about accusations leveled at them by the Leader of the Commons, which seemed to be blaming the intelligence officers for providing faulty evidence of the weapons of mass destruction. Kim Singupta is the independent reporter who broke the story. He tells Peace Watch he spoke with British intelligence officials who should have had the final say in what went into the reports going to No. 10 Downing Street.
The controversy basically is about precisely that, which is that the intelligence services are claiming that some of the information they passed on to No. 10 was then modified. And this is not a matter of dispute. In fact, Alistair Campbell, the Prime Minister's Director of Communication, has written to the head of one of the services, MI6, apologizing for the way one of the reports, the one in February, was mixed up with 10-year-old stuff from the internet. And he has said that things like that will not happen again in the future.
Hmm. And so when you write in your article that intelligence officers are holding a smoking gun, can you tell us exactly what the smoking gun is?
Well, it's they are civil servants, and of course they keep detailed, minuted reports of communications they have. But on this particular case, because they were so startled and slightly apprehensive about the demands being made to them. And this, again, is not being denied that, for example, one of the reports shunted six times between the government and the JIC because the government felt that the wording wasn't tough enough. Because of the toing and froing, the frequency and the unusual nature of the demands, as they put it, you know, they had kept copious detailed notes, which will be made available to the two inquiries which will begin.
So they basically have not exact transcripts, but detailed notes of the conversations that were that took place between members of the Blair administration and the intelligence officers?
I think rather than the administration, the conversations that took place between security officials and members of Blair's staff. I think, you know, there was more to do with the Downing Street staff who liaised with intelligence agencies prior to the dossiers being compiled, while the dossiers were being compiled and before they were unfurled by Mr. Blair.
So they said that the one particular report was sent back six times because the wording wasn't tough enough. Can you
yes.
share?
Sorry, go on.
Can you share with us what was said, what was changed?
Well, I mean, there were, you know, the various changes, nuances more than anything else. There was one thing the JIC eventually agreed to do was to say that that Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction presented a clear threat to Britain, which wasn't in the original report. I can't recall every single detail, but you know, they basically was toing and froing over hardening up of the language. On sourcing as well, on whether something was single-sourced or multiple-sourced. The intelligence agencies in this country have a grading system. If something comes from just one source, they tend to put that as a caveat that they have not been able to check it out with other sources.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of allegations that appeared in the dossier, it transpires now, was based on a single source and not multiple sources, as we had been led to believe.
So is it fair to say that the report contained misrepresentations or lies, or how would you characterize it?
Well, there were several dossiers. There was two in particular. One was in September, and in fact, when the September dossier appeared, I was in Iraq with other journalists, and we went to see some of the sites named in the Blair dossier. And of course, you know, we are not scientists, and we have got no idea whether we missed things which were there. But we demanded from the Iraqis visits to some of these sites, and we saw them, and overtly we couldn't find anything at all. But again, we are journalists and we are not scientists. That dossier had claims like, for example, the Iraqis would be able to launch a chemical and biological attack within 45 minutes. Now, it has since transpired that 45-minute claim was made by just one agent, not even an agent, you know, one informer who allegedly was part of Saddam's administration and was not checked out. Now, in the original dossier sent to Downing Street by the Joint Intelligence Committee, and they put a caveat saying that this is unconfirmed information. Downing Street wanted that changed, and it was hardened up to the extent that the report did not say it came from just one source. It didn't say anything at all apart from the fact it was presented as fact.
So I'm trying to get a sense of whether or not there were any instances within these dossiers where it was just sort of completely fabricated, or if it was more that they were, as you say, hardening the language or fudging the facts.
I think to be honest with you, I think it's probably the latter. The only example of wholesale changes was a dossier which was presented in February, which of course was quite crucial in the run-up to the war. And that was a dossier which Downing Street claimed had been compiled by the intelligence services, but then subsequently had to admit that in fact huge chunks of it were taken off the internet from a doctoral thesis written by a student 10 years ago. Now, that doesn't mean that the doctoral thesis written by the student 10 years ago is necessarily wrong, but it does mean that the information was 10 years old. And there's a difference, of course, between something a student has done on the internet and intelligence, current intelligence, which proved that Saddam Hussein was an imminent threat. Mm.
And, of course, that's the now infamous dossier that I believe Secretary of State Colin Powell used in his presentation to the UN.
Well, I think some of the stuff that the Secretary Powell used, in fact, did come from that dossier provided by Downing Street. We have seen no evidence that Colin Powell or his staff would have known that the dossier wasn't entirely the work of the intelligence services.
Mm. How deep is Prime Minister Blair implicated in this, if at all? You said it was his staff that was recommending these changes and these edits in the reports.
Well, there's again no clear direct linkage to the Prime Minister himself demanded these changes, none at all. But again, you know, there will be two inquiries which will try and establish the degree of culpability, if any there was, regarding Mr. Blair. But the people who dealt with the intelligence services were some of his closest and most trusted staff, people like Alistair Campbell and Jonathan Powell. Whether they acted with the full approval of the Prime Minister, we shall have to wait and find out.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about these two official investigations that are taking place. Who's conducting them? Are we talking about crimes that may have been committed here?
No, it's in fact, these are not even public inquiries. Mrs. Thatcher, after the Falklands War, when there was a perceived failure of intelligence ordered a public inquiry presided over by a judge. We had a similar thing over the arms to Iraq scandal going back 7-8 years. And in fact, the public inquiry going on into Bloody Sunday, where British paratroopers shot dead 14 people in Londonderry, Northern Ireland. This is what the opposition here are demanding, and also Labour MPs, that this should be an independent inquiry involving a judge who should have full clearance to look at all documentation. The Prime Minister hasn't agreed to that. What the government has agreed to is an inquiry by the Intelligence Committee of the House of Commons. The problem with that is, as far as the critics are concerned, is that that sits in secret. These are not open sessions. And the Intelligence and Security Committee report directly to the Prime Minister. So you've got a committee which is allegedly investigating the Prime Minister, which will be sitting in secret and then report and then giving their findings to him. The second inquiry was ordered by the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee, which can decide to hold such an inquiry, which the government has agreed to. The problem with that inquiry, again, as the critics say, is that because many of the people on it have not had security clearance, they will not be given access to all the intelligence data.
Kim Sengupta is a reporter for the British Independent newspaper. President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair have been under pressure from conservatives and liberals alike for what some have called discrepancies in the intelligence reports that were the basis of the rush to war on Iraq. Award-winning author and journalist Eric Margolis offers this commentary entitled "Bush and Blair Have Some Splainin' to Do," which was published in the Toronto Sun.
It's becoming increasingly clear the Bush and Blair governments deceived their citizens over Iraq, concocted false information, and misled Congress and Parliament. Both administrations face a rising storm of criticism and demands for full-scale inquiries. This column has been contacted by a number of retired intelligence officers, both individuals and groups, backing up assertions made here 2 weeks ago that a cabal of neoconservatives in President George Bush's administration distorted or faked information that formed the basis of claims that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction that imminently threatened the United States and all mankind. According to MI6, British intelligence, and to British press reports, Tony Blair's government was fed this same tainted information and even sent orders to MI6 to make it, quote, sexier, unquote. President Bush cited a crudely forged document about uranium sales from Niger to Iraq in his State of the Union address. Bush claimed Iraq could attack the West with weapons of mass destruction, quote, within 45 minutes, unquote. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's U.N. philippic against Iran turned out to be hot air. France had the best human intelligence sources in pre-war Iraq. President Jacques Chirac warned Bush and Blair there were no such weapons and rightly refused to join their illegal invasion of Iraq. Blair foolishly listened to Bush instead of Chirac. According to intelligence sources outraged by the corruption and perversion of the national intelligence function for political reasons, the main source of lies and distortions about Iraq was Iraqi exiles, many on the payroll of the U.S. government. These anti-Saddam exiles fed the Pentagon and New York Times a stream of phony claims about Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. Though scorned by the CIA, they were closely linked to American neoconservatives in key positions within the Bush administration. When the CIA couldn't find hard evidence of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, a new intelligence unit, the Office of Special Plans, was created. Intelligence community protests over this blatant politicization of national security were ignored. In fact, two more anti-Iraq intelligence teams led by Pentagon neoconservatives were set up, and all three reportedly fed exaggerated information to Bush and Blair. Similar reports came to Powell. Meanwhile, neoconservative writers in the American media provided agitprop for the war. Many of the senior officials involved were members of the Project for the New American Century, a hawkish far-right group close to Israel's Likud party that in 2000, this is prior to 9/11, called for the invasion of Iraq and Iran and worldwide American dominion. Given the lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, these red-faced neoconservatives now claim the weapons were moved to Syria and Iran, their next war targets. A few cans of poison or mustard gas and flasks of germ may yet be discovered in Iraq, or, more likely, planted there. But the only real weapons of mass destruction are nuclear weapons. The UN long ago confirmed Iraq had none. The House Intelligence Committee's senior Democrat, Jane Harman, calls Bush's claims about Iraq, quote, conceivably the greatest intelligence hoax of all time, unquote. One akin, perhaps, to Joseph Goebbels' claim Poland was about to attack Germany in 1939. The President of the United States and Prime Minister of Britain have been accused of lying to their people to embark on a war whose justification appears to have been, as U.S. Deputy Defense Secretary and war architect Paul Wolfowitz recently noted, for bureaucratic reasons. Former President Bill Clinton was impeached by Republicans in Congress for lying about sex. President Bush appears to have misled the American people, deceived Congress, violated the UN Charter, blown billions of dollars and many lives, both American and Iraqi, on a phony war, and will likely be reelected.
Eric S. Margolis, an award-winning author, columnist, and broadcaster, has covered 14 wars in Asia. He is the author of War at the Top of the World, The Struggle for Afghanistan, Kashmir, and Tibet. Well, even some members of the U.S. Congress are saying that Bush has some splaining to do. Prominent West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd took to the floor of the Senate last Thursday to ask where are the weapons of mass destruction and to call upon his colleagues to hold President Bush responsible for possibly leading the country into war under what he calls false pretenses.
Where are the massive stockpiles of VX, mustard, and other nerve agents that we were told Iraq was hoarding? Where are they? Where are the thousands of liters of botulinum toxin? Where are they? Wasn't it the looming threat to America posed by these weapons that propelled the United States into war with Iraq? Isn't this the reason why American military personnel were called upon to risk their lives in mortal combat? On March 17, in his final speech to the American people before ordering the invasion of Iraq, President Bush took one last opportunity to bolster his case for war. The centerpiece of his argument was the same message that he brought to the United Nations months before, and the same message that he hammered home at every opportunity in the intervening months. Namely, that Saddam Hussein had failed to destroy Iraq's weapons of mass destruction and thus presented an imminent danger to the American people. Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised, the president said. But, Mr. President, now, nearly 2 months after the fall of Baghdad, the United States has yet to find any physical evidence of those lethal weapons. Could they be buried underground or somehow camouflaged in plain sight? Have they been shipped outside the country? Do they actually exist? The questions are mounting. What started weeks ago as a restless murmur throughout Iraq has intensified into a worldwide cacophony of confusion. The fundamental question that is nagging at many is this: how reliable were the claims of this president and the key members of his administration that Iraq's weapons of mass destruction posed a clear and imminent threat to the United States? such a grave threat that immediate war was the only recourse. War. Lawmakers, who were assured before the war that weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq, and many of whom voted, now get this, many of whom voted to give this administration a sweeping grant of authority. Authority to wage war based upon those assurances have been placed in the uncomfortable position now of wondering if they were misled. The media is ratcheting up the demand for answers. Could it be that the intelligence was wrong? Could it be that the facts were manipulated? A little here, a little there. These are very serious and grave questions. And they require and they demand immediate answers. We cannot and we must not brush such questions aside. We owe the people of this country an answer. Those people out there who are listening, who are watching this chamber, we owe them an answer. And every member of this body ought to be demanding answers. I am encouraged that the Senate Armed Services and Intelligence Committees are planning to investigate the credibility of the intelligence that was used to build the case for a war against Iraq. We need a thorough, open, gloves-off investigation of this matter, and we need it quickly. Credibility of the president, the credibility of the president and his administration hangs in the balance. We must not trifle with the people's trust by foot dragging. What amazes me is that the president himself is not clamoring for an investigation. It is his integrity, President Bush's integrity, that is on the line. It is his truthfulness that is being questioned. It is his leadership that has come under scrutiny. And yet he has raised no question that I have heard. He has expressed no curiosity about the strange turn of events in Iraq. He has expressed no anger at the possibility that he might have been misled by people in his own administration. How is it that the president, who was so adamant about the dangers of WMD, has expressed no concern, none that I've heard about, no concern over the whereabouts of those weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? It is time that we had some answers. It is time that the American people were given some answers. It is time that the administration stepped up its acts to reassure the American people that the horrific weapons that the administration told us threatened the world's safety have not fallen into terrorist hands.
U.S. Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia last week on the floor of the Senate. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.